Glad to have you all with us. I want to turn to Mark chapter 5 this morning. We're going to continue on in our study of this book together. And I would ask you to try to keep your minds sharp this morning. This is a challenging text in some ways, just because there are two stories that we're going to talk about. So it's going to take a little bit, maybe a little bit more effort on all of our parts. But Mark chapter 5, I'm going to begin with reading this, verse 21. When Jesus had crossed again into the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had had a discharge of blood for 12 years and who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garment, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement, and he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. Mark is interesting in his writings, and I want to think about his style of writing for just a moment. A lot of commentators refer to this as an inclusio or a Markan sandwich. And inclusio is just a formal word, but Doug and I like sandwich better, because you think about a ham and cheese on a Blackstone griddle. That's right. Got a thumbs up. The reason that he writes in this way, I think, is very important. I just want to talk about it for a moment. What we have here is a story within a story. Verses 21 through 24 deals with Jairus and his little girl that is near the point of death. And as they're on their way to the house, he is met by another woman. A woman. Verses 25 through 34, who has this hemorrhage. She's had it for 12 years. And we end with the first story. In verses 35 through 42, we have Jairus and his daughter again. The purpose of this is very important. When you think about a sandwich for a moment, what defines the sandwich? It's not the bread. It's the meat. It's what's in the middle, right? So when you look at this story, this sandwich of events, what defines the whole section is what is in the middle. And what you have in the middle is found in verse 30, when Jesus asked the question, "Who touched my garments?" So when you think about this story, it's important not to just read these in snippets. Read the whole thing and think about the importance of Jesus' touch as you look at this with me this morning. First of all, I want you to notice some parallels between the woman and this 12-year-old girl. They're both females that get restored by the touch of Jesus. Both are addressed by Jesus as daughter. The woman has this 12-year illness, and the girl is 12 years old. So she's been alive as long as this woman has had this issue of blood. Jesus is scoffed at in both events. One of them is going to be by his own disciples. Both stories involve uncleanness, bleeding, and a dead corpse. Jesus is unaffected by their uncleanness, but they are made clean by his touch. These are some parallels in the story of the two women that Jesus comes in contact this morning. And I want to begin with this first one. Jesus has just been on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, where he's in a Gentile region, and now he's come back over where many of the Jews are living. He's met by Jairus. He's some kind of a president of the synagogue. He's no doubt important, and he's a very good man with a very good reputation. And he sees Jesus, and he approaches him. He does it boldly, I think, but he's also doing it out of desperation because he falls prostrate at the feet of Jesus because his little girl is near death. And, of course, I think we'd understand that. Any parent would be in turmoil and filled with desperation and her sense of urgency to find help if your child's about to die. And so this man implores Jesus, but you almost get the feeling that he expects Jesus to come. It's like he says, please come, all right, we're going to go this way. Come with me. He expects Jesus to get up and leave, and of course, Jesus does that in verse 24, as we would expect Jesus to do. The problem is that he is a throng of people, this huge crowd that's also following. They're going to be traveling with him, and so it's making it very difficult for them to travel to the house of Jairus. And so you have this urgent matter, this little girl about to die, and it would seem she needs to hurry. The crowd's making it difficult to walk, and now a woman enters the story who has been ill with this discharge of blood for 12 years. And she has done everything she knows to do. She spent her money on doctors, and things seem only to get worse. And so she is just as desperate as Jairus is. So we have a situation here. What do you think Jesus should do? She's going to come up and want to just touch the garment of Jesus and move on. And Jesus has a choice to make. He'll let her just move on, or he can address the situation. And if you're Jairus, put yourself in his shoes for a moment. Your little girl's about to die. This is the perfect scenario. She can just be healed, but then she can just move on and we can get to my house to help the little girl. And the remarkable thing is that Jesus, knowing a girl is about to die, stops. In today's world, if a doctor did that, probably would get sued for malpractice. Jesus seems to be jeopardizing the life of a little girl when he didn't have to. But here's the first point I want us to think about. And that is that Jesus sees everyone as equally in need of him. When you put Jairus and this woman together and you put them on a balance, one in society standards looks a lot more important and needs to be tended to before the other one. And I have no idea what she would have been like as she came in there to try to tug on the back of Jesus. But she has this issue of blood. She's an unclean person. She's an outcast. I get the feeling that her garments may have been just soaked with blood. But not Jairus. He's a well-to-do man. But when Jesus stops, he's going to go help Jairus, but he's also going to deal with the woman because he sees they're both equally in need of him. And when Paul says what he does about all of us falling short of the glory of God, We need to be very careful that we don't look at people and see these people over here, well, they're really good people, and these people over here, well, we're going to tend to them first. Every one of us are in the same boat. Every one of us need Jesus just the same. And we need to see ourselves the way Jesus sees us. Now, the way this story plays out is that she's been suffering for a long time, and she wants to go and touch his cloak, and she thinks she'll be made well. I don't understand what was going through her mind. I'd like to know. Maybe she is thinking this is a matter of superstition, something magical in his garments. Maybe she realizes that he is as close to a representative of God as she's going to get to, and she needs to get to him. Or maybe like in Exodus 29, remember when they touched the altar of God? What was holy made them holy. Maybe she thought something like that. Or maybe she knows Jesus is special. We simply aren't told. What Mark says in verse 27 is that she heard the reports about Jesus. And she came up behind him and she touched him. Now, that's what a desperate person who recognizes their need of Jesus does. She hears, she comes, and she touches, or wants to be touched by Jesus. And that presents another lesson, I think, that when you finally see yourself as Jesus sees you, someone who is dreadfully in need, you'll do what the woman does. Our sins are an urgent matter. And when we understand that Jesus is the only one who can take those sins away, we'll listen, we'll look upon him, and we'll want to grab hold of him. And that's what she does. Now, Jesus immediately heals her. And then we come to the central verse in verse 30, that Jesus perceives a power has gone out of him, and so he turns around and asks, "Who touched my garments?" Now, it's interesting because the woman, when she touches the garment, she perceives that she's been made well. Jesus knows he's been touched and perceives power has gone out. Jesus' question. And we would be, I think, we need to be very careful to infer that Jesus didn't know who touched him. Mark's already shown us he can read the thoughts and the minds of people. Maybe it's similar to God in the garden when Adam and Eve sinned and he says, "Where are you?" Did he not know where they were? Or was he forcing an answer from the party as he addressed the question that he addressed the question to? And it's obvious God was holding him responsible for his actions. And so, you gotta like the disciples. They state the obvious. Well, there's a lot of people around you, Jesus. I mean, we're getting touched too. But Jesus continues to seek after what's happened. He actually then turns around and is looking for the one. Verse 32, he looked around to see who had done it. The woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, and she fell down before him, and she told him the whole truth. Why the question? And I would suggest that Jesus did not simply want to heal her. He wanted to have a relationship with her. And I'm thankful to God that he wants to save me. But he did not come just to save. He came to have a relationship with you and I. That's where the powerful encounter is. It's in the relationship we can have with him. There's a Jewish philosopher named Martin Buber who wrote a book about relationships. It's a very difficult book. I have only read maybe a couple pages. in a couple months. I've been told maybe a page a night is the best you can do. I've done a lot worse. I've actually put it down for a little while. But he talks about I-it relationships and I-thou relationships. And he says, and this is an example, I have an I-thou relationship with my books or my computer. Those aren't as significant. But an I-thou relationship is a relationship that you have with maybe those you are close to, your wife, your kids, and most importantly, to God. And he sent his own son so that we could have that I-thou relationship with him. And that's what this is teaching us about why he stops to address the woman. He wants to get to know her. Now, if you still wonder whether Jesus knew or not, just look at verse 34. Jesus addresses her as daughter and says, "Your faith has made you well." How did he know that she was sick in the first place? And that she was made well. And we come to this final story of Jairus and his daughter. The life of this one individual leads to the death of another. This 12-year-old girl dies because Jesus stopped. Jairus is told, "You don't need to bother this teacher anymore. She's dead." It's, I almost get the feeling they may recognize that Jesus is somebody pretty great. He's pretty remarkable. Yeah, he can do some healings, but he's reached his limits. He's not going to be able to raise this girl from the dead. Nobody can. But Jesus comes up and he does something. He makes another statement that makes you kind of wonder. Just like, who touched me with all these people around? Now he says, "Well, she's just sleeping." And the disciples, we don't hear them say anything this time. Maybe they caught on a little bit. I'm sure they were tempted. She's cold as ice. What do you mean she's sleeping? In both of these accounts, these miracles, and I'm learning this about Mark, his miracles are pointing all the time to the cross. He's anticipating when he dies and he's asleep and will rise. That's why he can look at death as just a sleepover. But you also have the miracle of the woman who's bleeding, which points to the cross too. You ever think about that? He stops. Life is in the blood. He stops her flow of blood because he knows that when he goes to the cross, he's going to let his blood flow freely so that we can all be saved. Both events point to what he's going to do in the near future. That's how Mark is setting up these miracles. They have a purpose. And so Jesus is going to go into this house and he puts everybody out except for Peter, James, and John. He approaches Jairus and he says, "Don't fear what these people are saying. Just believe." I want to come back to that in a moment. But he says, "Just believe." And we shouldn't downplay the difficulty of what God or Jesus is asking this man to do. The man was already desperately in need of his child to be made well before she dies. Now she's died. It's really tempting sometimes to just disbelieve in these hard situations. And the text really implies when Jesus says, "Just believe," that his faith needed a little bit of propping up. And so Jesus goes in, "Talitha kum," he says to the girl. He touches her and says, "Sweet girl," something of that nature. And she rises up, Jesus meek and gentle. Now notice Jairus and the woman in the contrast that are here. He is named, she isn't. He is important, she's unclean and an outcast. He beseeches Jesus on behalf of another, she pleads for herself. He comes to Jesus with respect, but approaches him from the front. She comes and approaches Jesus from behind, not wanting to be noticed. He is also desperate, but boldly says, "Come with me." And she just trembling with fear wants to get out of there as soon as she can. He has faith that needs propping up. But Jesus praises and commends her faith as one of the things that saves her. Now, it's this last contrast that I want to think about for just a moment. I wasn't for sure how to make this point. But I want to think about what Jesus says to her. Just believe. I think that there are a lot of Christians, when they're trying to convert other people, just say, just believe. You just got to have faith. And I'm not sure that's Jesus' point here when he makes this statement. And I want to think about it with you for just a moment. If you were to go on the streets and ask somebody what faith is, you'd probably get a lot of different answers. Well, faith is like religion. There's a bunch of different faiths, a bunch of different religions out there. Some might just tell you, especially in our culture today, that, well, whatever you see is true is all that really matters. Whether you can prove it or not, if you're genuine in that, go ahead. And I think we wouldn't have to read far to realize that's not what Scripture teaches. On the other hand, to just simply say, just believe, that's not what Scripture teaches either. If we think about it from our point of view instead of Jesus. What's Jesus doing? Because people look at Christianity and they just talk about, you all have that blind faith religion. And interestingly, the Bible never suggests that we should believe that which we do not think is true. The Bible does teach that true, legitimate faith rests on the truthfulness of the object of faith. Isn't that what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15? If it is not true that Jesus rose from the dead, then your faith is what? It's vain. It's not because of insincerity. You may truly, genuinely believe Jesus rose, but if he didn't, it doesn't matter. But given the overwhelming proof and the evidence that there's nothing in the tomb, and the 500 or more people that saw him outside of the tomb after he had died, that's pretty significant. That's something you can believe. And so what I'm suggesting is this, while it's about Jesus' touch, there is a major theme of faith here. And God is never asking us to blindly just believe him. He could, he's God. But he doesn't do that. And that's the grace of God. So think about this story. Somehow, she didn't just blindly come and say, I'm just going to touch his garment and see what happens. She heard about him. What about Jairus? When he says, just believe, what do you think he's referring to? He had just witnessed. He's been on the road with Jesus when he approaches that woman. And she makes it clear that somebody specifically tried to get to him. Because she confronts Jesus too, and she tells and bears the whole truth. Jairus doesn't have to just blindly believe. He's already got proof on the way that Jesus can do something else. Something even more remarkable. Bring the dead to life. Our faith does not need to be blind faith. God has graciously given us a road full, a roadmap full of reasons to believe in him. So, let's end by thinking about some of the evidences of what Mark has shared with us so far for our faith and why we can believe because of the evidence that's there, reasoned out faith. In this section of Mark 4:35 through what we've gotten to so far, He's done humanly impossible things. He calmed a storm with a word. The demoniac, which everyone else tried to subdue, Jesus expels the demon with a word. The woman, no physician could help her. She only got worse. And yet a simple touch of the garments, and she's healed. And finally, a girl who breathes her last. When she dies, all attempts to cure has ended. And yet Jesus does it. It goes back to the question of Mark, who's Jesus? He's the Son of God. And he's given us every reason to put our trust in him. It may be this morning that you are someone who maybe you need your faith propped up a little bit. And Jesus is gracious and merciful with you, and he'll help you do that. He'll show you. We can help show you why he's worth believing in. It may be that you aren't a Christian, but that you are beginning to realize, because you're being enlightened by Jesus himself, you're starting to realize the reality of who you are. This is the man I need. And he wants to do more than just heal me. He wants a relationship with me. Isn't that pretty remarkable? So if there's any way we can help you come to Jesus, pour out your needs to him, he will transform you and change you. If there's any way we can do that this morning, we ask that you come now as we stand and sing.